Hey everyone, and welcome to the Weekly Awakening podcast. Listen, I'm super excited about this episode because I am doing my first in-person interview in a year. I cannot believe it's been a year, and it's been a wild ride of growing, but I'm super excited. Let me tell you who I have in the chair in my little studio today, Daniel Beck. Rewind. I was looking for people. I said, okay, I need to start like searching for astrologers in this area that I can connect with, that I can interview on my podcast and everything. And Daniel came up, Inner Makeup Astrology, correct?
That's correct.
Correct. Yes. He came up right away on Philly's Top. And he had just moved here, though. He came up on Philly's Top Astrologers. And I emailed him. And what I love about it, I said, you can text me or email me. And he called me, and which was good. I kind of went with that because most people don't even like to talk on the phone, but I do. And we just instantly connected. He was a makeup artist before he was an astrologer, you know, walks a path of self-awareness, spirituality, and just has an amazing amount of astrology knowledge that I hope to one day accumulate. And let me tell you, he just moved here, coincidentally, from New Orleans 2 weeks ago. He lived there for 4 years, right?
Yeah, about 4.5 years. So yeah, four and a half years.
How do you feel coming back up to Philly?
I feel like a quincunx. I'm everything's out of joint. Not bad, but just requiring adjustment because everything is so up in the air right now. Just, you know, getting settled back in and all that.
And you're from Philadelphia originally.
That's correct. Yeah, from Media, Pennsylvania. So, okay. And then as we were just talking about earlier, I have family out here in the Westchester area. And one of my first jobs was actually here in Westchester. So
that's cool. He was reminiscing as he came back here after 20 years driving to Westchester.
Well, that's right. Because I was driving out here almost like coming to work today with you as opposed to just, you know, visiting family and all that. But yeah, I do have a connection to this area. I think it's a great area. A lot of great artists and, you know, even I think there are a couple, there was, you know, the psychic twins or the astro twins, do you know them?
No, but I'm going to write that down.
Yeah, they're famous psychic twins. I think they came from Westchester. There's a famous, because I have a background in classical music as well, Samuel Barber, famous composer. There's a nice zeitgeist here over the decades. Really nice things come out of Westchester.
A lot of nice things. Yeah, I feel like this Westchester has a really interesting, like you said, kind of eclectic, creative area.
Absolutely.
I even think this area in general, the main line, Philadelphia, and I don't know if it's, you know, a very old city or whatever, has like an energy grid here where people don't leave or they always return.
You know what? It's very interesting. One book that I had read, it's a wild, huge book, but it's called Mason and Dixon by the famous reclusive writer Thomas Pynchon. And it does get a lot into Philadelphia, even Delaware, Cape Henlopen, and the grid. It gets into mapping and the grid, even feng shui. It's a crazy, amazing book. But what you just said, I think, is correct. There is an intractability to this area that is the land and even the way that it's been set up, for better and worse.
So we're both. Well, your Virgo sun is definitely has a lot of information, right? Mercury likes to know a little bit about everything.
Well, and yes. And then I have a stationed Mercury at the time of my birth in Libra. So that very relational, very maybe struggles to make a judgment to discern which information should come in to edit it down. So, you know, maybe I could have evolved towards my higher Virgo and Sun purpose.
Well, maybe that's what you will progress towards.
Hopefully.
So I want to talk about, which is cool, as you guys know, I'm still a hairstylist and that was a big part, but to meet someone who was a makeup artist turned astrologer, can you elaborate on that journey?
Yes. My gosh, I guess this is a long journey, but you know, like I was just saying a minute ago, my background really is in the humanities and arts and classical music and all that, but it's hard to pay the bills on that. So pretty early on, I just started working retail in various capacities. And ultimately I made my way into more cosmetics. I worked for different lines and all that and got into makeup artistry. And then, you know, a lot of years went by, but ultimately I found out a lot of people, you know, and I think I was a decent makeup artist, but a lot of people wanted me just to help them get into a space, whether they were honestly going out to dinner or going on TV or whatever, to get them in a calm, prepared state to do whatever they were doing. So it was actually, gosh, it must have been the summer of 2013. And I was having a frustrating day. So I went to my now husband, James, like, just order me a tarot deck. Let me just see. Because I'd always had an interest in occult phenomena. And I was kind of reading the New York Post and Sally Brompton and then Susan Miller. And then I was like, what is going on in my life? It was, you know, I was living in New York at the time in Queens. It's difficult to hang in New York. You know, it's yeah. cost of living, all that. So, you know, I got this tarot deck and I started doing readings for people and I was surprised people liked it. I didn't think they would. I was like, you know, let's just see where this goes. And then it was also that summer, Henry Seltzer, who does, time passages software, he and Susan Miller gave a lecture at the Apple store in Soho and it was a full moon in, it was the height of the Uranus Pluto square. So Susan was like, "Well, I need volunteers to show this." There was another square another opposition happening too. So she was like, "I need to demonstrate this." So I got up on stage and I was Pluto, and I was standing in the wrong spot. And then she grabbed me. She's like, "No, you need to get over here." So I wonder. I really wonder what that's. I guess she was yanking me into my Uranus Pluto square.
Into orbit.
Yeah, into something. So that, you know, that kind of started it. That was 2013, and you know, I just made my way. Ultimately, James and I, my husband, we moved out of the city to Connecticut. He got a job in Connecticut and, you know, it took a while, but I was still doing makeup, but then I started my practice. I mean, there's a wonderful group, the Astrological Society of Connecticut, and I met some people there and I just, you know, I went on my way and I, you know, definitely people helped me along the way, but largely pretty much self-taught. So I have a pretty wacky, eclectic way of doing
which
astrology.
You said on the phone, and I was like, oh, so, yeah, okay. I want to hear it and know it.
Yes, but, you know, the thing is about, you know, cosmetics. When you think Rick Levine, I remember him talking about this, the cosmos is a word, is a root of the word cosmetic. So, you know, the inner and the outer, you know, everybody talks about inner beauty, but there really is something to that spirit and matter being, you know, mirroring
connected.
And reflecting in each other. And you really do see with the makeup arts and, you know, aesthetics that there's a very powerful effect that it can have on people, a really uplifting effect. So yeah, I think it's just great that, you know, you're doing hair and astrology.
When you did your makeup, would you go over astrology with anyone? Would you talk
about
the transit?
Well, I was doing it a little bit. There was, I did some events. There was, I remember a while ago, I mean, this is years ago, but I did an event. It was with Red Flower, which is a cosmetics line in New York. And I was doing some makeup and, you know, tarot and astrology with people. So it was happening. As we talked about, it definitely can be a challenge to do both.
It's a lot of energy for both.
But I think maybe you're on. You could do it. So that, you know, maybe you could take, you know, do that. You know, I just went to the astrology of it.
What pulled you to that? What was like, you know what, astrology is really...
Because it was just, you know, it was definitely the what is going on in my life. And I also think... looking at charts, because again, I have a background in music. It's almost like reading a piece of music or reading a text. So there's something in my eye that I'm able to look at a chart and interpret it. Actually, Manilius, I think, can help us with that. You know, the great astrologer poet Manilius, but it's his song Unto the Stars. So this idea of the horoscopic artist, you know, something that really moves me and informs me. And I think, you know, we really are all that. We were talking about this a little bit before, that I don't think the astrologer can ever be divorced from the chart that they're looking at. You know, the idea of, you know, especially horary astrologers can teach us about this, that, you know, oftentimes the seventh house is the condition of the astrologer. Wow. So that's always there. And then if you want to really get deeper and, you know, perhaps more psychological, metaphysical, the seventh house is being a projection of the 12th house. And, you know, that goes back to Manilius. Like, you climb out of the 12th house and culminate into the 10th and then decline back down. So that can be definitely more of a, you know, harsh, difficult interpretation. But then, you know, that's kind of what it is. So you can deal with that and grapple with things that are projected into the seventh house. And then that comes back to you. And then the clients come bearing a message. And that's what Maggie Hyde, I don't know if it was Jung who coined the term, but the mutual connivance. She's a great British astrologer. But that clients, you know, you can see natal connections to charts. I'm not saying you really don't want to have somebody come to you and then you're like, okay, it's about me. What are the natal connections you're bringing to me? But no, that I think it's actually good to ethically look at that. It's like, okay, is there an issue that the client's bringing up? And then I can own that and, you know, not bring myself into it too much that it's impeding a reading with a client or even just a friend or, you know, whatnot.
Was it easy for you to go from doing hair to developing, you know, your clientele, your astrology clients?
Well, I was, you know, I never reached the level of hair, if you will. I know, you know, because I was, you know, just doing makeup artistry, which is, and not that the makeup arts aren't an incredible art, but there's, you don't have to go to school and get an accreditation for the makeup arts. Was it easy? You're saying, was it easy to transition?
To transition.
Yeah, I would say it was a pretty natural evolution.
With astrology, are you self-taught? Did you take any classes, courses?
I would say it's a combination of fairly self-taught, my own journey, but definitely help along the way. I actually recently got certified the Venus Star Point practitioner, which Ariel Goodman, so I did that. I do undertake periodic supervision with Jeffrey Cornelius in England, Company of Astrologers. And, you know, these conversations, I think, can really help just amongst astrologers. You'd be surprised just what you learn along the way. And your clients teach you. And I don't, this is just my recommendation, but I don't think you ever want to lose your, again, the horoscopic artistry, your unique expression of astrology. You know, I think it's definitely a combo of learning along the way, but you know, being true to your own astrology.
Now, can you explain how you kind of attack a chart with someone? You said a little wacky.
Attacca. You know, that's because of music, there's, to use an Italian word, like, just go, psh, attacca. Yeah. Well, I think that's it, you know, to put, you know, like attack, you know, just like if you have a piece of music, you just go, you know, what's his name? Well, Adele's new album, she was doing music by... Oh, I'm so embarrassed. The Gentleman, very famous. Wrote Misty. It was the song. Earl Garner. And they always said about him, he would just go. He didn't read music, and they were just like, "What the hell is that?" So I think that's the point. When you're reading a chart, you have to go with it. And we were talking a little bit about this earlier, that it's, you can do all your preparation. You know, you can explore everything, all the books, you know, all the different house systems, whatever. But when the chips are down, you just go.
Just
and
go.
It is an instinctual thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then if things come up, and I think this is definitely more the Neptunian astrology is divination thing. It's like, sometimes it's better to just trust that and not know, not to just say, okay, here's what's happening. I'm going to apply this onto the reading, but to trust that you don't know what you don't know, and there are going to be things that'll be revealed in the reading as you start going, somewhat more of an improvisation. But that doesn't mean that you don't have your techniques going into it. But it's kind of like, you know, you get onto a ship or a, you know, it's like Star Trek or whatever, and you don't really know where it's going to go. So you have the Enterprise, or you have the helm of your ship, you know, if it's, you know, to use more of a Hellenistic term. But then, you know, when you're out at sea, look, it's going to be chaotic. So I think it's accepting that chaos, and then, wow, then there can be great insights that come in.
I can say when I started, I started doing donation-based astrology readings, yeah, just to learn, right, maybe 2 years ago. Right. And it was a lot, so that makes me feel better. I knew I had like the intuitive, mm-hmm, gift, because, mm-hmm, there was a lot of, like, I knew some of the basis. I, yeah, do not know. Every year I know new and new, more and more. Yeah. But I was like able to just go with it.
Absolutely. And I don't think you should stop that.
No, I love that.
Interestingly, there's a fun little technique, and we can get so bogged down in the technique, but Dorotheus, it was Jen Zart who brought this up, and Anthony Lewis was writing about this, great astrologers, that the participating ruler of your ninth house, and you probably want to use whole sign, although I actually like the term topos or the places, it's just a personal preference, but the ninth place, the participating ruler, that can give you insight into how you feel about astrology, divination, even science. It's very interesting. So we should look at your chart to see what that says.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so
I would love to.
I know. So it'd be fun to just kind of play with that. But I agree, you know, you really got seeing the mutual connivance now. Like, how many, you know, people who are in aesthetics then do astrology? Probably more than we realize. But you don't
I think
see
it's happening
that.
Even it's gonna start happening.
I know,
because
again, cosmos, cosmetic. That's I got that from Rick Levine, but it's like the inner and the outer beauty. I mean, I know it's sort of derided or made fun, but it's a, you know, it's a powerful thing.
It's a very powerful
thing. And it's very
thing.
You know, the makeup arts, the you know, aesthetics, you know, it's a true art. I mean, when it's done, you know, so I think, you know, that's something, you know, people could heed more to really to look at that. The makeup arts is something spiritual.
Who were some of the astrologers that you maybe read from, learned from, okay. really thought, wow, like, these are my astrologers?
Definitely Jeffrey Cornelius. Definitely Maggie Hyde. I love Anthony Lewis. There are so many. I really love Maurice Fernandez. Oh my God. There's a lady, Janet Booth, Astrological Society of Connecticut. I think she's really underrated. She gets into the vertex, which is where the
kind of like Abraham, the vortex. Like
Oh my God, Abraham. Yeah. So the vortex of the vertex. The, vertex is where your local prime vertical. So, you know, east to the, the zenith, which is different than the midheaven most of the time, down to the west. And it's where that the prime vertical intersects with the ecliptic. And it can be, people talk about it being fated encounters or just kind of, like, this would probably be a vertex meeting.
Would this be, yeah, that's something I still need to learn
in
astrology?
Yeah, we'll talk about, we'll have to check out our charts to see where our vertices line up. but Janet, she gets into that, different techniques. Gosh, who, there's so many. Tracy Marks, she was really big, but her book, The Secret Self, is really good, the 12th house. You know, definitely when I was first starting out, Liz Green.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of us start with her.
Dimitri George.
I really like Dimitri George. Yeah. Okay, so as we know, I'm definitely a wacky, eclectic astrologer, but I love her bringing in all the asteroids. Oh my God. Yeah, just, I love people. There's actually a guy here, Alex Miller, in Philly. Yeah, I think he's not in so much in the city anymore, but I actually just emailed him when I moved back, but totally into all the named asteroids, and it's hilarious how they can show up. So I love her combo of very high classicism, if you will, but then we're going to bring in the asteroid, you know, just like the names. So, you know, I definitely, Henry Seltzer, you know, a lot of his stuff just through his software. Okay, Eris, his whole thing with Eris. And my parents have all these old books in their house, and there was an Eris book, like from the early 20th century. Somebody wrote a novel called Eris. So I got Eris I love, but you have to be careful with Eris, because remember, and I don't even blame her, because the story was she was disinvited to a wedding. It wasn't her fault. But that when you introduce that tension and chaos, you're playing with fire there. But this book, Eris, I don't even know who the author was. I have it here. You know, it was this early 20th century book. And it basically, there is a mother, her daughter is born, and the father wanted a son. And it was finally he gets a daughter. And the mother was like, I want my daughter to be named. I haven't read it yet, but this apparently was about, I want my daughter to be named something that nobody else is named. So the doctor, like the country doctor, is like, all right, well, Eris, or you know. And then she's like, okay, great. And he's like, well, do you know that Eris, you know, do you know who Eris was? And she becomes this, apparently in the book, she becomes this big starlet. So I got to read this book, but this Eris announces herself. I really like Eris. Gosh, who else? I mean, there's so many. Let me think of who I have at home. Well, Ariel's book on Venus Star Point, that was very moving to me, especially as I got to the last pages.
Why? I haven't read it. I'm going to have to read it.
Because Venus Star Point, that's Sun conjunct Venus every, like, I guess it's 8.5 months. We literally just had it. It's in Capricorn, and it creates the five pointed star, and it's actually somewhat analogous to feng shui and controlling cycles and creative cycles. And then it's quintiles, which is more the fifth harmonic, which can be very creative and very magical. So it's more of a feel and emotion to it, I think. It's less just like a hard aspect that we're dealing with. And it can be very beautiful. But I think it's also Ariel's stuff. There's very unique, her own in song interpretation, which I really like. I'm just going to think in my. Okay, so there's one guy, he went to my alma mater, Alex Boxer. Now, he's actually a skeptic of astrology, but he wrote this whole book called Scheme of Heaven, which he got from Lily. And he actually tests Benatti and some of the other people, but he talks about the humanities and astrology and the gift of astrology, which I think is really critical for skeptics to, you know, and I think there are good skeptical arguments, but just tone it down in the history of astrology through the sciences and the humanities and just to calm down. Yeah. But this, so it's like, that's a really great book, Scheme of Heaven. Hold on, I'm going to just visually go through I'm just trying to think who else. But then there are a lot of fiction writers who know, like Thomas Pynchon. There are like even Cormac McCarthy and Blood Meridian, Lucretius on the nature of things or the universe. The whole first page is, oh, ode to Sun, Venus. And he was getting into atoms thousands of years ago. Milton, Paradise Lost. I mean, talks about God creating the sextile and the trine. I mean, so this is all through the humanities. Kurt Vonnegut, Surfacing by Margaret Atwood. She doesn't get too much, but she's into astrology. So a lot of fiction writers really do it.
Do.
Yeah.
I'm really impressed. I just want to say how many books you know, just like offhand, the titles. These are complex books,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, just moving back home, and I'm grateful my mother didn't chuck it all out, but there are all these old books, and they're, you know, I think a lot of times fiction writers, you know, and just arts and the humanities. And again, cosmetics, there are other disciplines. And again, I've been thinking, just before this interview, I was thinking about the muses. You know, they were really the patrons of the arts and the sciences. And, you know, that it wasn't, the humanities weren't, this is my big thing, aren't divorced from the sciences. And so, or other magisteria. So, you know, whatever your discipline is or your creative craft, whatever that might be in your life, it shouldn't be divorced from everything else.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, whatever that is. So for me, you know, I a lot of my family members, I think over the years, read and they liked music and all that. So whatever that, you know, whatever you have in your DNA, your inner makeup, that can be different things for different people.
Now, if someone's just starting out or just like new to astrology, what books would you recommend for them to read? Like,
God.
What's like a must? Like, these are the three musts you need.
Oh, my God. I don't even. I guess I would say Tony's book, Horary Astrology, Plain and Simple, because his, even if you're not doing horary astrology, I think for me, this is my opinion. There still is a resonance of divination to a natal chart. And I think that's why after a long, long time, I use Placidus, because it's based on time, points of space through time, points through space and time. So Tony, Tony actually oftentimes does a combo of whole sign and quadrant. And actually there's a lot of historical precedent for that. But his writings about the signs and the houses are wonderful. And it does combine a lot of the classical stuff with, you know, still using outer planets. So I think it's a good cross section, even if you're not doing horary astrology, just for signs, planets, houses, what the you know what I mean? So you get a broad cross section of classical, but then, you know, still modern. My gosh. I don't know. I guess I'll say it now.
Say it.
Ariel's Venus Star Point. I think Venus is really critical at this point.
Very critical.
Yeah. And I think
in the beginning of an astrologer's.
Yeah. And I think the Venus synodic cycle, which is that's what the Venus Star Point is. And that was really critical to some of the ancient cultures. So I think that is really key. Oh, number three. I don't know. I don't even know. I mean, there are a lot of fiction books. I guess, you know what? I guess I'll say Maggie Hyde's Jung and Astrology. I guess, you know, because even more so, I love Moment of Astrology. That's probably, if I had my Desert Island book, I would take that. But Maggie's gets into Jung and, you know, different. You're going to get Jung. You're going to get, you know, what was it to have psychological astrology come into play in the 20th century, but then craft horoscopy from more of a traditionalist, especially like, you know, they're the Brits. So yeah. Lily. So there's a flavor of what was the tradition, but then, you know, how can psychological astrology give us insights? So I guess if I had to pick three, then it would be, you know, Ariel, Tony, Maggie. I don't, but this is just like the moment. I mean, there are a lot of fiction books. I actually, you know, on my website, I do have a book list of fiction books and astrology books. Just innermakeup.net.
Innermakeup.net.
Yeah, it's just book recommendations. So if people just want to see that list,
oh, good.
They can see what books have moved me. But I think, again, you know, the, who was it? Edmund White. He wrote Our Young Man, Nocturnes for Lena, famous gay writer, very lauded and all that. But he feels that, you know, if you're a reader, then it's about reading. It's not so much about the canon. You know, not that there aren't works that we go back to, but it is kind of, again, it's your own journey.
Your own journey.
And actually, okay, Salman Rushdie, this is a great book, Harun and Other Sea Stories, and he wrote it for his son. And it gets into magical realism and materialism. And if you lose imagination, then you get so mired in material reality that it just devolves down into materialism.
Yeah.
So I think that's a great message. And he talks about books as being more of a tapestry as opposed to like little islands under themselves. So you're reading, so that's just books, but other pieces of threads of, you know, texts, textures, of, you know, whether it's weaving or makeup or hair or books or painting or music or whatever. It's more of a thread rather than, you know, little, you know, you have to read X now.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's more the verve or the spirit of it. And then it'll be, especially if you open yourself up to what you don't know, then things get revealed to you and then you have knowledge. So it's like knowledge, not knowledge, knowledge, not that. Knowledge. Yeah. Or, you know, there's this other book, Trickster Makes This World. That's, I love that book, but that gets into enchantment, disenchantment, and not like, you know, it's just like, you know, illusion, disillusion, you know, so it's like reality.
Neptune.
I know. Okay. So, you know, funny enough, in my chart, I have a, you know, no, actually, I don't. I can't. Well, this would be more of a modern interpretation, but I have Saturn and Scorpio in the 12th house. And then, but hold on. Well, actually, no, it is an aspect. Okay, Saturn does sextile my natal Neptune. So the need for hard materiality, but, you know, Neptune. So again, the illusion, but then this is get real. And that's an opportunity. I have to take it because it's not going to just make it happen. You know,
you have to take it when you see
that. It's a sextile. It's not, you know, it's not going to force the issue. So I need to do it.
Sextile is like an easy walk in the park. You kind of have to put a little more work into it.
You got to put, this is, I think, yeah, there's, oh, John Marchese. I feel so bad. He was NCGR, like New York for a lot of years, but he gave this lecture. Again, I really recommend Astrological Society of Connecticut. You can just log on. They're really wonderful people. He gave a lecture and he was like, if the sextile promises, the trine delivers. Like,
oh, I like that.
Oh, I know. Yeah, he amazing. Yeah, so
I love that.
You know, he had another thing too. He was like, there's always a new astrological technique for a lonely astrologer on a Saturday night. So sometimes, again, simple is better sometimes. Not that you don't go down the rabbit hole, but sometimes if you go down the rabbit hole of complexity, you're just getting a reflection of your own mind being complex.
Wow.
So you're right. So it's, again, where there's this interaction cognitively with our mind with, you know what I mean? So
what was the astrology culture in New Orleans like?
You know, Strangely, there wasn't a ton of it.
There wasn't?
It's the strangest thing. You know, definitely we're talking about Priestess Miriam, and she did kind of her own form of geomancy. And actually, voodoo is very beautiful. And, I see some supposedly, like, enlightened people, and a lot of people actually deride it, and, it did get commoditized, but there's a real beauty to the voodoo that she was doing, and she was doing geomancy on like her own astrological table, but there weren't like a ton and ton of astrologer, definitely a ton of tarot, ton of psychic, but then there's a wonderful lady, Denise, she reinvigorated, there was an astrology group, and now she just reinvigorated New Orleans Astrology Meetup, so there was another lady, there were a couple, you know, there were people, definitely, it was there, but there wasn't necessarily like an astrology community that was, you know, that was very visible. Like if you like Googled it, it would just come up. If you Googled it, I would sort of pop up. But there were other people, but it wasn't
not like
a true
up north, at least up where you were, Connecticut, that's New
exactly
York,
right.
Philadelphia.
Yeah, not, which is why I'm saying we're kind of astrologers in exile. So, which by the way, sometimes fallen planets, Tony Lewis talks about this, they can get up. You know what I mean? For fallen, you can get up. So it's not, sometimes the exile can be really good. So
I like that.
I know, right?
What do you think is the most complex or probably the hardest part of your chart, aspect of your chart? Yeah. Something that you know you're here to work on in this lifetime.
Well, you know, it depends on how you look at it, but I definitely have a strong scorpionic signature. You know, and different people are going to, would say that's a valid, and, you know, depending on who's looking at the chart. But I do have Saturn in Scorpio. I have Pluto in the 12th house, any system. I have strong 8th house. So, you know, definitely the hard psychological imprint. And then definitely how to make artistry and transcendence happen in life. Because, you know, Venus rules my 12th house, any system, and it's angular. So there's the beauty of that. Funny, like esoteric astrologers, they believe that the cusp of your 12th house is kind of some past life stuff. And the ruler of that 12th house, this is Tracy Mark's stuff, The Secret Self. So the artistry, the psychology, you know, and how to liaise in the world and with other people.
You kind of get
that
imprisoned by your own mind?
Yes. And then also even just, you know, it just, yeah, so like the art, the psychology, and then just, because what I was saying before about like the Rushdie, like around the psychological dynamics around that. And then see, Scorpio gets into business too. And what's the, you know, that was, a really harsh interpretation. Did you ever see the movie Before the Devil Knows You're Dead?
Felix? No.
Oh, yeah. It's like,
have to watch that.
You know, that gets a really dark interpret, like the world running on evil. And this gets into like old school, like Joan Rivers, like at the end of the day, it's business. You know,
wow.
That's the Scorpio stuff, like eighth house, other people's resources. You know, for more of a classical interpretation, the idol place, it's like the bill comes due. You know,
yeah.
I mean that, you know, it's just, and then the exchange of resources. You know, how is that psychologically, you know, so that, you know, is that satisfying? Is that equitable? What is that? And then you're right. I think that can feel really limiting. And then just on a basic thing like Saturn and Scorpio, for me, this would be more of a Hellenistic, but, you know, first house. But the upshot of that is it's a day chart. It's Saturn above the horizon, and it's angular. So there's a chance, and Saturn being more the classical social planet, you know, dealing with material. And then that, you know, I'm home now. So that Saturn rules my, you know, fourth house classically, Aquarius. So that, you know, it's a very visceral of, you know, when you think of horary astrology, like if you have a planet in your first house, like right on your body. So it's,
wow.
You know, it's, yeah, yeah. So it's, you know, the ruler of the fourth, and he's being in the sort of the first place. So you see how it's like a blend, you know?
I love that.
I think if you're going to do a blend, you have to be able to think freely and discursively. It's that's, you know, but then again, when the chips are down and when you're even like now the way I'm talking, but with a client, you've really got to do your best to get the right message in the right time. I think that's really key. For people, because it's, you know, let's face it, it's, I think at the end of the day, it's more about people, not astrology.
Do you have a certain day, like when you go overcharge with clients, do you do like a certain day, a certain time? Do you have any of that
configured, or just whenever you have time? Chaotic.
I know.
I am interested, depending on how much I'm into it, I will look at the consultation chart. I will look at the chart of the moment to see how that can inform things. To give some insight into how to move with it based on that chart.
What software do you like to use?
I use Time Passages.
Okay.
Just because it's what I started with. There are a couple other things I would like it to do. It's pretty straightforward. I mean, you do get a lot of stuff that's good, but in a weird way for me, and it's on Mac, so I'm just a Mac person. So it's, you know, I got to check out AstroGold,
Solar Fire?
Well, yeah, the Solar Fire from Mac.
Yeah.
Because it gives you fixed stars, it gives you declinations, it gives you midpoints. So right away, that's enough. There are a couple other things I would like it to do that it doesn't do, but for Mac, it's a nice aesthetic. I like it. People like the graphics of it, so I go with that. I'll probably at some point use AstroGold more, but that's kind of where it is now. I do like, and honestly, Henry's interpretations. He's a good writer, and there's another lady who worked with him, but their interpretations are good. So especially for beginners, if you click on it and then people see it, they do like that. So it's a good for clients. They like Time Passages, I like the little app on Mac. For iPhone or whatever.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wait, which app? The Time
Passages. Time Passages. Yeah.
I haven't downloaded that. Okay.
Yeah, astrograph.com and Time Passages. I'm not sponsored by them or anything, but this is just my own. Of my own volition. I do support it. And then even in a weird way for me, sometimes if I get so complex, it's just not...
It's just gonna
not help anyways. So, you know, just to keep it simple for me help, because you can see just the way I'm talking. It's like the Mercury Virgo, and I have a lot of Gemini. I have Moon, North Node, and Gemini. So that's so much Mercury. And again, Mercury Station. That's like, you know, it's like a lot. So
we both got a lot of Mercury. Mercury, it's a constant thinking, and it's a constant like you think of something, and then you think even more into that, and then even more into that, and then even more into that.
Oh yeah.
It doesn't stop.
Absolutely.
Now, what is your goals now as astrologer back up here in Philadelphia?
Okay. Well, my goal is to really have my astrology be part of a whole tapestry of a framework that includes the sciences, the humanities. So astrology is not divorced from what I'm doing creatively, you know, that it's so it's and it's so it's that, but it's also something that's practical and inspired, that it's the spirit of it. So it's holistic in that sense. However that plays out, that's my goal for the astrology that I'm doing, which can be hard to get going because you have to have an imaginative framework to do that. Because I think a lot of times with astrology, it just immediately goes to the chart. Let's analyze the chart. Let's think about charts all day. But then you lose out on some of the wider inspiration about how astrology is connected to other magisteria and disciplines. And then how one might move there, you know, whatever that might be, you know. So, and that's actually where the wacky charts can come in. Like, if there's like an artist synastry to somebody's chart, you're like, well, I just thought of this artist. And then it's like, wow, they have strong synastry with this person, or, you know, or like a book. And, you know, even like this Eris book, it's like, oh, she was born around 1905 at 9 a.m. in the morning. Well, that's a chart.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So these things really pop up. So then that's literature. That's a chart. There was this Lifetime movie I was watching where it was like twins, and it was like twins who were reunited, and it was like Leo on the third house and the sun was in the 12th house, and it got all into their undoing for each other. Because I was somehow able to get their birth time, like, yeah, from the TV show. Now, I don't know if they knew that, but that's
fascinating.
Yeah, I know. So like books and fiction can actually be come into the charts, which you would think how is that? I mean, there's no,
it's all connected,
literal, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, life, no, like we're here physically and there's something to that with some material relation to astrology, but that's just fiction. But I guess you could say, okay, at this transit, this could be an example of that. But I think, I'm not sure that Lifetime, I don't think they knew that.
Do you know what's interesting? That what I have observed is that with twins, mm-hmm, is almost every twin that I've come across, and with doing here, I've come across a lot of people I've known, are almost all Geminis, the sign of the twins, or they're Gemini risings. And I think I know one who are Cancers, and they're Gemini rising. They're all Geminis.
Well, now again, this would be more of a modern interpretation, although Lily got into consignificators, and now there's talk about directions but the third house is the, you know, Gemini's consignificator. So that, you know, and that was, you know, depending on how one interprets it. But it's, you know, it's still, regardless, the significator would be the sun. And it was in it would have been, well, then there you go, because that would have been sun and Gemini. So there it is anyways.
Yeah.
So that, right. So we don't even need to get into the whole conversation around houses so and it would be, now that would be more quadrant. It would be like they're undoing. They were like murdering each other. So Lifetime, I love Lifetime movies because, you know, so at my in-laws' house, they have, a lot of times they have Hallmark going.
The Hallmark, yeah.
But Lifetime, you got to pay the price. You know, there is a price to be, there was actually one Lifetime movie was good. It was some guy who directed it, this one movie. He was actually the director of Scary Movie or whatever.
The comedy movie.
Yes,
yeah.
And he did this, like, it was really good. It had like sort of Hitchcockian elements to it. Oh. It was quite good. Like,
do you remember what it's called?
I don't know. If you just look up like director Scary Movie, then he did a Lifetime movie.
It'll come up. Google it.
Yeah, it would come up.
Now, something I wanted to discuss that we had touched a little bit on the phone and before is the ethics of astrology, which I don't hear in my studying now for 5 years. I've heard nothing about the ethics of astrology.
Okay. So this, and actually Jeffrey Cornelius does this a lot better than me, but he brings up a case, which you have to go back to the Renaissance, but it was Pico della Mirandola or Mirandola. I never know how to say his name, but the Renaissance magicians, and they were really versed in astrology. They got mad, especially because they were pretty much still under the thumb of the Catholic Church. They got mad at astrologers for predictions because they were saying, well, that subverts God's free will that you give you. And, you know, leaving that whole question aside for a moment, there's the ethics of making a prediction. And the astrologers at the time, they predicted death of this guy Pico. They're like, by this age. And he ended up dying. But then there's a chart that actually shows like Mars in the seventh house at the death opposed to the first house. So it showed. So the problem with that is if there's,
I have Mars in the seventh house at the first degree in Pisces.
Death to somebody. Yeah, so the issue with that is there electional astrology? And the other thing, so that's that. So if you're making a prediction, that gets into, is there any other way out? Is there a line of fortune, as sort of my people, the company of astrologers would say, finding that silver line? So that if we're predicting it, it's like, well, wait a minute, we're astrologers. Is there electional astrology? Can we elect something else? That's ethical. Now, the other thing is the science of astrology and, you know, doing, because it's these large statistical analyses, all that. If there is some astrology out there that can like be replicated, then it gets into, that's like a scientific ethical question. Like, what is the application of like an atomic bomb? I mean, that's a serious ethical question. And, you know, because, and that needs to be taken into account. What is the type of astrology that we're doing? What are the effects of it? So that's sort of the long and short of it. I think of out there, you know, it's like, you know, hello, Dolly, out there, like, you know, like that, like put on your Sunday clothes. Or, you know, this phrase out there I came upon recently, and I actually just talked to somebody who's in Kansas, but Truman Capote's In Cold Blood, other Kansans call Hokum, Texas, out there. And what happens out there? It's sort of this idyllic town where this very famous murder happens, because everybody thinks the town is perfect. It's like this, wow, out there, a science of astrology. Do you really want what's out there? Do you want the perfect, idyllic, you know, pie in the sky science of astrology out there? It's an ethical question.
And how do you deal with someone when, I'm sure you've come across, you looked at your chart and maybe all the planets aren't in the best placements, right? They're not, they're like,
you know, this
really
is,
hard
I
aspects.
Think it's, you know, it's, okay, this, sometimes you see bad charts that look good. I mean, I was looking at my chart, especially in the context of the Venus star point, it was terrible. It was like Mars in Cancer, Saturn in Cancer in the eighth house. I mean, really bad. Now, I guess you could still bring in the terms and those are the right terms. But at a certain point, it's like, that looks terrible. But I was having the time of my life. And there was another chart where it's, because I think sometimes if you have good things happening, then, you know, that gets into, well, okay, Capote, Saint Avila, she said, the answered prayers are far worse than those that go unanswered. So even if something's like looks on paper good, then it, what can the effect of it be? And the other thing is, again, again, Jeffrey Cornelius talks about this, but the idea, what does divination do? Does it just reveal destiny, or can it disrupt the machinery of destiny?
Wow.
And that's a big question. And is it, you know, I go to the side that divination can disrupt things.
You do?
Yes.
Why?
Because of Man in the High Castle. You know,
oh, that's the show?
It's this idea that divination can be a guide, like the I Ching. It's like how it's, or with Plato, res divinae, sacred matters. Like you go to the oracle to see how you might proceed. Or just even if it's just revealing fate or destiny or determinism.
Almost like it's changing your free will?
Well, free will is an interesting thing. I mean, you know, there's an Australian astrologer, Terry McKinnell, and I asked him this on my podcast, you know, fate and free will. He's like, oh, it's an old Christian question. but I think the way, I actually think part of fortune, what's the fortune that, what's the trash and the treasure in the trash? Or like, if you open your mind up to the options, then what can befall you? That's part of fortune, which you'd think, oh, okay, I'm stuck with my part of fortune. But there's a lot of options with part of fortune that, you know, what's the, okay, how could this chair bring you fortune? Well, Venus Pluto recently that we've been dealing with, I've been selling a lot of crap online. So, but would you have really thought of that if I hadn't done that now? Or the Oracle and the Matrix. Now, this will really, because this movie just came out. The original Oracle, Gloria Foster, who is an amazing actor. Oh, my God, check her out. But she was the original Oracle in the Matrix. And she's, when Neo goes into her kitchen, she says, now, don't knock that over. And he says, what? And he knocks over the plant. She's like, well, now this will really get you. Would you have done this if I hadn't said that? So again, we're involved in this stuff. Yeah. It's constantly, you know, it's very mysterious anyways. And that's my point. Mystery being revealed if we open our minds to it, and we don't know what the hell's going to happen. So it's really complex. My thing now is not so much fate, free will, but part of fortune, how to deal with materials in yourself and just what comes into you and how are you facing that?
Yeah. What's taken away?
When you make a conscious choice that's part of spirit, then you kind of, I think, bind yourself to things. Interestingly, I was telling you, a great astrologer, I met Chris Brennan in London. I asked him this. I said, with zodiacal releasing, can you negotiate with it? He's like, well, you have to figure that out for yourself. So I was like, okay. So there is, I think, who knows? It's hard to know. Now, one other thing I'll leave you with this. Twilight Zone. There's a episode called Nick of Time, and it gets into they break down. They're going to New York, and the car breaks down, and they're in this diner, and there's this like divination napkin holder machine, and they keep asking it questions, and finally, it was actually William Shatner, and it was like his first thing, and then his fiance, she's like, okay, do you want to just like be controlled by a divination machine? So there's a certain point at which, you know, the radicality of looking at charts anyways, which is, well, Bonatti, late degrees of a horary chart, nope. You know, early degrees, maybe nope. You know, like there's a, you know, can you figure it out on your own anyways? So it's very unclear from moment to moment anyways. And I think that's good, because if it's unclear and it's hard for us human beings to say we don't know. But then if you don't know, then, okay, like Vera Rubin, the great scientist, she discovered dark matter. And it was because it was totally a male-dominated field at the time. All the guys were doing this other thing. She's like, well, I'll do this other thing. And she discovered fucking dark matter. We don't even know about dark matter. It's like 96% of everything. We don't know anything.
That's wild.
You know, I think we're just at this point where we're starting to know things.
Where we're starting to. So I'm gonna end this episode with this. I want to know, Daniel, what do you think are going to be the biggest transits of 2022?
My God. I guess I'll go with this. The two Venus star points, which is Capricorn right now, and then Libra in October, which is a big deal because the Venus star point, you know, again, which is Venus conjunct the sun, it's conjunct by longitude, the degree of the zodiac, okay. But it won't be, it only happens by declination, you know, which is exactly in the heart of the sun, which is the technical definition of Kazemi, but it's still loosely used Kazemi. But that happens in October. So it's the first time that Venus star point will have shifted into, you know, again, tropical Libra since 1771.
Wow.
So it's from Scorpio to Libra. That's a big shift. I think that was the last time it happened. But anyway, this Scorpio to Libra is a really big deal.
What do you think that's going to look like for people?
I don't know. And I think so one thing, I can speak more to the arts.
Yeah.
Actually, right around that shift, Mozart, he was 15. He had written an opera. It was in Italy. And guess what? It was about Venus. And the opera itself is all about like fidelity. It's a little old school, but it's about, you know, being faithful to the love to whom you've been promised. So I think it is about like fidelity. And Mozart, at the end of the day, was very hopeful and optimistic about the better angels of human nature. So there's that from the artistic standpoint. I really don't know. I'm not a mundane astrologer. Yeah. I think what I could give to people is the cardinal shift of dealing with the materiality of 2022. Just look, it's hard reality. That might not feel good. That might be sad. That's Saturn, because Saturn rules the Venus star point Capricorn. But then towards the end of the year, it shifts more to this Libra thing, which can be diplomacy. It can be negotiations. It can be tense negotiations. It can be Athenian, which again, wisdom and even conflict, but there's also, you're coming at, and then, you know, it's like kind of quasi late 18th century. So if you think back to that era, that could be that. But I think the best of it is to, what I could tell people in this moment, not necessarily what is going to happen, but what is this moment for you now, is deal with the Capricorn in the beginning of the year, which is a slower pace.
It's been so slow. I feel like Venus,
I know,
been Capricorn,
it's a
forever.
It's a slower pace. But really dealing with that hard materiality, not necessarily easy, but realize that it's Capricorn, which is still cardinal, so it'll be a turn, and then you turn to Libra, which, you know, it's autumnal, it's beautiful, and it's going to be Venus. So that, you know, that's what I would say for the year, is to, you look, it's the, you know, especially us, we're here up north, it's cold, you know, but just dealing with the contraction of that, which is Capricorn, it's, you know, intaking, it's, and then the extroversion of Libra. So that's what I would say. But I, you know, I'm this, you know, I dance around it, but I would give people the Venus star point for that.
Okay. I love that. Thank you, Daniel. Yeah. This has been an amazing episode. Yeah. Amazing. Now tell everyone again, welcome back home to the Philadelphia area. He just moved back 2 weeks ago. So tell everyone where they can find you again, your website.
Okay.
What you offer on your website.
Yes. Okay. Innermakeup.net. www.innermakeup.net, which is, again, because I used to be a makeup artist. And you know, it's yourself. It's your inner makeup. Who you are and then how to move that in the world. You can go there. I do, of course, I offer consultations for individuals, you know, couples. I do quite a bit of sinistry. Just even two people, because I love the dynamics there. I do some family work. I do offer divination coaching. Again, who the hell are you as an astrologer? That kind of stuff. And I do offer coaching, like dramaturging for creative people, you know, because I have a creative background. So just using astrology to be like, okay, what are you doing creatively? And to try to get that going. And like I said, I have book recommendations, you know, so, you know, there's lots of stuff on the website and, you know, Instagram, all that.
What's your Instagram?
Innermakeup, astrology, Innermakeup. Facebook is Go Innermakeup. You know, so I've got, you know, you can find me, all that stuff, YouTube, Innermakeup, astrology. So depending on where I am, some things are more active or less active.
I feel that. Yeah. I know. Same. Twitter. Do you do Twitter?
I really don't do Twitter. It pushes out to Twitter some of the content, but I've just never had.
Twitter's fun for astrology because you can just
that's true.
It's Twitter's dying, but not for astrology. There's a lot of people just putting out daily stuff.
Okay, there's a lot of great astrologers on Twitter.
Chris Brennan, he posts a lot on
there.
There's
a lot of, and what's his partner's name? Lisa. She has wonderful stuff too. There's a lot of, honestly, a lot of great people. That's the thing. It's a blessing and a curse because there are so many great astrologers.
So many.
It's like you almost have to just be like, okay, I'm going to put on my blinders because it's, otherwise it's just, you know, well, I guess it's like Liberace, too much of a good thing is wonderful. So that I guess is not bad.
You just find the ones you that resonate the most with you.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, thank you again. Thank you for coming out here to Westchester and coming in, being my first in-person interview in a year. This was amazing. Thank you everyone for listening. Remember, you can follow me on social media, Cosmic Colleen, 1C in the middle. Thank you again and have a beautiful day. We'll be right back.